How can we step off the treadmill of busyness and discover true productivity? Where can we find space for our souls to breathe?
Welcome to the Unhurried Living Podcast. I'm Alan Fadling.
And I'm Jem Fadling. Many of us are hurried, and hurry is costing us more than we realize.
We invite you to join us in the life-giving patterns of Jesus so that you can enjoy more creative energy.
Together, we'll learn to rest deeper, live fuller, and lead better. Hello, and thanks for joining us today. I recently reread Tina Fey's Bossy Pants, which is a pretty fun read because she's funny and she's a really good writer. Mm-hmm. So in that book, I was reminded about the four rules of improv. And it sent me on an online search for the rules because I was interested in learning more about them. So I stumbled on not only Tina Fey's rules, which were in the book, but I also stumbled on the 11 Commandments of Improv by Del Close. So Del Close was a coach to many of the Saturday Night Live greats like Dan Aykroyd, Mike Myers, Tina Fey, Gilda Radner, and dozens more, like every famous, amazing comedian that you can think of. Del Close had a hand pretty much in their training in improv.
Cool. Well, you know, as you and I have been preparing for this podcast and talking about these rules, you know, it's amazing how just these simple rules can help actors, you know, stay in a flow of conversation and creative story and continuing on in these, you know, improvised scenes and all.
Yes.
But then you and I were talking about how these guidelines, these rules for improv could actually be a really helpful set of tools for our relationships and in our conversations.
Yes.
And so, you know, we've tried these out in our own friendship. There are a few of these in particular I think we've really landed on.
Yes.
As strategic for us. So, you know, and we've been married almost 33 years, so we've had a little bit of time to practice, you know, conversation. So anyway, all that to say, these rules of improv have really helped us at times to get unstuck more than once.
Yeah, we've used these personally in our conversations and also in our work. It works on pretty much every level.
Yeah, so this isn't just a nice theory that we're chatting about. We're actually sharing with you something that sometime back we stumbled on and we've gone back to them more than once just in our own interaction. But as you said, also in the work we do of training and speaking and spiritual direction and all the different facets of kind of our actual work.
Yeah, it's you wouldn't necessarily draw a line between improv and creative listening and relationships, but you can do it. Yeah. So that's what we're trying to do today. So I thought we'd start with looking at Tina Fey's four rules, and then we're going to share, I think, about six of Del Close's 11 commandments.
Okay, yeah.
So you can always Google it and find out what the other five are, but we chose six of them. And so let's start by looking at Tina Fey's four rules of improv, and I'll just list them, and then we're going to unpack them. So the first one is to agree, which is to say yes.
Okay.
Number two is you say yes and.
Ah.
So yes and. And then number three is make statements as opposed to questions. And then number four is there are no mistakes, only opportunities. So you can probably already get a feel if you've ever watched improv how these rules keep the flow going.
Yeah, keep the interaction between the two or three or more actors flowing.
Yes.
As opposed to getting stuck or getting stopped or getting, you know, blocked or whatever.
Yes.
So the first one you mentioned was agree, and that is to say yes. So when you're in an improv scene, you know, it doesn't matter if you actually agree with something that another person says. You know, you're creating a make-believe world anyway. And so the ability to say yes to whatever the other actor has given you is essential to moving the story forward. So in real life, in our actual relationships, now when you're in a conversation, you may or may not agree with something the person you're talking with says. But saying yes in that setting can simply mean that you're acknowledging their thoughts and their ideas and you're honoring and respecting their opinion. You're receiving what they're saying. You aren't jumping in to shut them down or to interrupt them with your corrections. Here's the, you know, 2% that's wrong in that you just said. But instead, saying yes means that, you know, you're listening to what they're actually saying, and you're agreeing to engage with them on that basis. Your yes is sort of a way of receiving them instead of rejecting them.
Yes.
It's sort of welcoming them rather than evaluating them. And so, you know, it requires not just a little bit of humility, and it also requires the ability to go with the flow.
Yeah, and you can see how that would help greatly in a marriage, in a friendship, with a coworker, to just say yes. And I think the word you used was receive.
Yeah, I mean, it's yes, I hear you, not yes, you're right.
Yeah.
You know, we're not evaluating necessarily the content of the statement that someone makes as much as we are welcoming them as a person. You know, in a sense, that's what love does.
Yeah.
You know, love welcomes, love receives, love embraces. And even people with differences can do that.
Right. So saying yes, basically then, that God is saying yes to us all the time. Yes, come into my presence. Yes, I see you. Yes, I hear you. Hmm. So we can do the same thing for other people. So right on the heels of saying yes, which was number one, we're moving on to number two now. And that is to say yes and which is a huge plus in our communication. We've personally benefited from using the word and as often as we can. So saying yes and means that you take what the other person has started and you keep it going. So you don't just say, yeah, and that's it. You add to it. So and is a great word, and we try it as often as possible. And we use it instead of the word but.
Yeah, sometimes a big but is a real problem in conversations.
What it does, you know what but is, right? But is a conversation killer because, you know, whatever came before it is basically negated. And what comes after the but is how it really is. Yeah. So when you use the word but, it just, like I said, negates. So in healthy relationships, and can also be expressed as empathy. You can continue what the other person has begun by letting them know you really resonate with their feelings. Even if you have something else to add, the and of empathy first will be like giving your friend $1,000. You know, most people want to be heard and understood. So the word and keeps the other person validated and heard when you add your part to the conversation.
Yeah, and you know, when you're in a conversation with somebody else, there are ways in which you're different,
of course,
from them. You know, you and I, we're introvert me, extrovert you.
Yeah.
You know, I'm an interior sort of processor. You're more of a conversational processor. So there's a lot of different ways that we're different. A lot of ways we're different.
And yeah,
the deal there is the differences can sort of become the engine for, but.
Right. Yes.
You know, yeah, you did it that way, but I do it this way.
Right.
And so I come back and I negate you.
Yes.
In a sense, I reject you. And say, yeah, whatever you just said, fine, but.
But here's what I've got.
Here's what I think. Lucky you, let me dispense this on you, or won't you be happy?
Right.
And so we've just found that the word and is that little teeny tiny word is a word that enables you and I in our differences to receive one another.
Yes.
To welcome one another, to be in a communion with each
right.
other. And that's huge.
I have found it to be a very validating word because it doesn't, like you said, it doesn't cut me off and shut me down. If one of us says and, then we know the other person believes in what you just said and now wants to add to it. And
yep.
it's really a life-giving little tiny word.
So again, just like in an improv scene, you know, the and is a way of saying, let me take it from where you brought us. And let me carry it on from there. Whereas, but in that situation would be a little sort of like, well, that was real nice, but we just hit a cul-de-sac. So let's do a U-turn and go the other way. And now the other person's trying to figure out, now where
what are we doing?
I don't know what to do with this.
Yes.
So the sense of, you know, the conversation is moving in a direction and helps it keep moving.
Yes.
So I can't say enough about how important that's been for you and I for a number of years, this little insight. And we got it originally from these rules of improv.
That's right.
So now in Tina's book, the third rule of improv is make statements as opposed to asking questions. So this reminds us to be part of the solution and not just someone who points out problems. And this can also help everyone in the conversation behave like they are mature adults. You'd like to hope if everybody's older than 18, we could also behave like right. we are mature adults. So asking questions sometimes puts the other person on the defensive or puts them under the pressure of having to be the decision maker, even if they don't want that job or need that job. Asking questions can be a way of pushing off your own responsibility and sort of landing it on, you know, somebody else. So, but making statements. Now, here we keep our sense of self intact, and we can be part of the solution and not put a burden on someone else.
Yeah, that really is another life-giving one. When I see that, you can sort of take a deep breath. The pressure's off, and you can picture that, right? When you're having a conversation with someone who's sort of holding their own, but in a gracious, humble way, you feel like the conversation can go deep and wide, and there can be understanding, and you can move forward. So I think that one may seem a little odd, like make statements. What do you mean? But you could see how in a improvisational, if someone's just asking question after question after question, the scene will not go anywhere.
Yeah. Well, I think it's fair for us to maybe think out loud a little bit about this, which is to say, you know, when we talk about making statements, we're talking about conversations where there's emotion.
Yes.
And there's opinion.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes we use questions as a way of sort of trying to control the conversation,
mm-hmm.
right? We try to, you know, we use questions to sort of manage and herd the conversation in the direction we think we want it to go. So if you're going to ask a question, don't use that kind. You know, if you're going to genuinely ask a question that's curious,
yes,
or inviting, and you're going to listen after you've asked that question, as opposed to ask a question and sort of expect them to land, you know, in the little herd pen that you created for them to walk into, because that's where they should be.
Right.
So I think that's the sense in which, you know, the statements are a way of not trying to control,
right?
You know, as opposed to the questions, which sometimes in our conversational lives. We don't use questions well
yeah.
often, and that's why in this situation we're suggesting this idea of make statements.
Make a statement. Well, moving on from the third rule is the fourth rule, and the fourth one is there are no mistakes. There's only opportunities. So for our purposes here, we're going to link mistakes with judging. So if every time we make a mistake, we judge it and then punish ourselves with negative self-talk, we put the brakes on any kind of creative flow. So our inner critic is alive and well, and he or she wants to point out the mistakes and flaws nonstop. So, but our inner critic does not have to be the boss of us. You can simply say, well, I just found another way that doesn't work.
Mm.
Now I know. So then you keep moving forward as you discover ways that do work for you. So mistakes, failures, closed doors, these are all helpful in that they can move you in a direction that may actually be more fruitful. But you'll never know if you let the mistake shut you down.
Yeah, that's really true. So, you know, there you were talking about mistakes in terms of our own inner dialogue.
Yes.
And how you and I both, you know, a lot of our work is writing, you know, whether it's books or it's our weekly emails or it's scripts for these, you know, podcasts or it's other material that we're writing. The thing that will paralyze me almost quicker than anything else is that inner critical voice. And the problem is it usually lives sort of somewhere in the back half of my brain where I can't see it. It sort of feels like it's whispering from behind the curtain on stage. And it's just paralyzing. Another way I think that this helps us, there's no mistakes when it comes to then our interactions
yes.
with people. Now, that's not to say that you might actually genuinely disagree with something they say, but rather than starting with that, start with some way of affirming them as a person. They're not a mistake.
Right.
You know, they're a beloved child of God with whom you have the privilege of being in conversation. Now, we can have disagreements, but what we need to learn how to do is learn how to have disagreements as friends. Learn to have disagreements as brothers and sisters in Christ and realize the in Christ part of that is the more important part almost always than the point at which we disagree with each other. We have a way of just expanding our disagreements so that becomes the bottom line. Are we not living in a world right now where everybody seems to be interacting as though our opinions are the most important things about us, and you have a different one than me, so, you know, up yours or whatever,
right.
Rather than, wait a minute, could we just take one step back and realize that person with whom maybe I deeply disagree, that person happens to be a beloved child of God. That's the bigger reality about who they are, and I would do well in the eyes of God to treat them that way first, rather than jumping first to, oh, you think differently than me, so here, let me let you have it.
Right. Yeah, so in that way, it says, there's no mistakes, only opportunities. The opportunity for us is to, again, be loving, be receiving, have empathy, to not have the need to tear someone down. So opportunities for good.
Yeah. There's always an opportunity to practice the great commandment.
Yes.
Always.
Yes.
So now before we move into some of the commandments of improv by Del Close, we want to extend an invitation to you to join in our Patreon community. Our podcast will always be free to all of our listeners, but by subscribing to Patreon, you can help, and your monthly subscription enables us to continue to spread our message globally.
And you can partner with us for as little as a dollar a month. And plus, depending on your subscription, you'll get access to some resources and opportunities available only to our Patreon community.
So help us produce the work you already love and become a subscriber today. We thank you in advance for becoming a part of our community. And to do so, you can just head on over to patreon.com/unhurriedliving to become a patron today. So let's now move on to a few of Del Close's 11 commandments of improv, and we chose out about six of them that we wanted to talk about. The first of them is this: you are all supporting actors. So in an improv situation, you know, you don't have a star and a nobody.
Right.
Everybody's there to support the creative story that you're producing.
Yes.
So in this sense, if we sort of take this into biblical language, this is the idea of thinking more highly of others than you do of yourself. It's not all about you. It's not all about your opinion and your ideas and your perspectives and your convictions. We come as a servant in every conversation we have. And so we learn how to offer something that supports the other person in their life or in their situation.
Yeah, and a second one of these 11 is never enter a scene unless you are needed. Now, this actually brings up the subject of boundaries and possibly even the subject of burnout. You know, especially those of us who are in helping professions, we can get in the habit of helping even when it's not asked for. So it's good to keep an eye out for true needs. In this case, they're saying never enter a scene unless you're needed. So you can see how if they're on the stage and everybody comes in at once and tries to say something, the story gets muddy very fast.
Mm-hmm.
So watch for an actual opening of need. And this can help us remember actually that God is the primary helper. So we can use discernment to see what he's up to, decide if we are actually needed and what we might say or do that is in cooperation.
Yeah, I think this sort of gets at the sense that some people have. You know, you don't have to be a pastor to think this way.
Right.
But the assumption that everybody needs me or I've got to do something in every single situation. And what ends up happening for some people is they end up with a yoke, to use Jesus' word and Jesus' language, that's heavier than the one Jesus gave them.
Yes.
We become over-responsible. I think it helps to always remember that we are always coming in behind, in a sense, the primary actor, which is Jesus himself.
Yeah,
he's the one taking action. And I'm joining him in a really good work he's up to. And he's not like sort of at a loss for what's needed in this situation. And he is actually happy for us to join him humbly, you know, as a follower, to be a part of something he's up to. He does not need us to take the lead from him in helping all the people. So again, this idea of never entering a scene unless you're needed sort of just says, watch for where God's nudging you to act, to love, to speak, to share, and realize that sometimes what's needed from you is silence or maybe just simple presence.
Yes, that's good.
Here's a third rule that we drew from the list, and that is save your fellow actor and don't worry about the piece, and remember that your prime responsibility is to support. In a sense, this is to say, just in our lives and in our conversations and relationships, the person is always more important than your plans or your programs or your structures or your big ideas. People matter more than things. Now, that seems kind of elementary to say. I don't think, is anyone going to argue with that?
No,
not as a theory. And yet, we treat people as though they're there to serve our things, our plans, our, you know, our big ideas. And when we do that, we treat people as though they're less important, less valuable. I mean, I speak as someone who's been in church ministry for years, whether it was in local church as a pastor or then coming alongside pastors and missionaries and parish church leaders. And one of the things we always say, and this was given to us by one of our mentors, God is interested in people. The church is people. It's not actually the program of your gathering, you know, that scheduled piece of paper that, you know, everybody's treating like the Bible. You know, the church is not the building where you happen to meet, whether it's a building you own or it's a building you rent, any more than your house is your family. You know, it just happens to be a building in which your family lives. It's really easy to forget that this whole thing we're about is about people. The great commandment, the back side of it, the tail side of it is love your neighbor. And what I find is, you know, in the theme of our unhurried living, you know, ministry, the more hurried I become, the more thing-centered my life becomes.
Yes.
And the less people-centered my life becomes. You've got to slow down a little bit to have a life that's about people and about serving people, blessing people, noticing people, listening to people.
Yeah, it is, as you said, elementary. But it is very easy to forget. So our fourth commandment here from Del Close is never underestimate or condescend to your audience. So in this one now, we're going to again talk about humility, being teachable. It's okay not to act like I'm the only one that knows what's going on around here, right? So people around me are smart. They're intelligent. God is actually working in their life as well. So I don't have to talk down. Yeah. I don't have to puff myself up. I can just be who I am and receive others as they are. And one of the things I try to remember is you never know where something is going to come from. I mean, it's easy for us to make judgments about people based on how they look or what we think they're like before we actually know. And so then you're just making a judgment, well, I could never receive from them, or they probably don't know what I know. I mean, am I wrong here?
See, unfortunately, sadly, you're not wrong.
Don't we do that?
Yeah, I mean, we know that a lot of you listeners are leaders. You know, whether leader for you means you have a title in an organization, or a position in terms of your job, or whether you're just simply a person of influence. We know that many of you are leaders. And I will just say, as a leader, one of the great gifts has been to realize God can teach me through anybody.
Yes.
And especially he seems to love to teach me through people I wouldn't expect to learn from. Now, I expect to learn from a famous author. You know, if right. I get a chance to have a chat with someone like that, or to listen to something they've said, I expect to learn from them. Now, of course, we probably all do.
Yes.
But I have learned some of the most important things I've learned in just a real simple conversation, maybe after a gathering where you and I have spoken. And it's just a real simple conversation I'm having at the book table or, you know, up front afterward. And I am always at least trying to be attentive to how God might want to speak to me through the person with whom I'm having a conversation. I assume there's actually something of grace that God wants to give me. I remember one time way, way back when we were in college ministry, there's this one guy in our college group who was kind of socially awkward. And, you know, most of the students kind of shied away from him because, you know, he was just kind of weird. You know, he just didn't seem to fit in.
By our standard, yeah.
Yeah, by our standard, exactly. And I remember one time, you know, he would come up after a talk and he'd want to talk for 10 or 15 minutes. And I would kind of feel like, oh, gosh, you know, I want to talk to other people too, you know. I remember one time he asked me how he could pray for me. And I thought, well, I guess that's nice. And so I told him something. He said, thanks, because, you know, I pray for you every night. And I realized when he said it, you know, part of his sort of social awkwardness was when he said he was doing something, he was fully focused on this thing. And I realized God was using him to teach me, look, it's not about how cool, how clever, how, you know, how much IQ points or how much EQ points or any of that. God can use everyone to bless me. And that's part of the humility. It's realizing whenever I sort of close myself off in my leadership pride to another, I may be missing something beautiful God wants to give me because I'm not expecting it to come from that particular person.
Oh, and what a loss that is.
It really is sad. It's a loss for me.
Yes.
And it's a loss for the person who God wanted to give something through.
Yes. Yeah. So God is at work literally everywhere and in everyone, through everyone we can receive. That is so good.
Yeah. Well, a fifth rule, which is this, trust your fellow actors to support you. Trust them to come through if you lay something heavy on them. Trust yourself. And so in a sense here, faith is trusting in our conversations that what we need will be there. And for us also, of course, our ultimate trust is in God himself. So there's a sense in which we have these conversations and we have these relationships, and it's not just two of us having it. There's a third one present. You know, one of the things we've said before is that community is the fruit of communion. And by that, we say, what we mean is it's very hard to seek community first. A lot of times we're in churches or ministries and they're talking about, oh, we're going to build community. And so we're going to start some small groups and have community. Sometimes that happens. But actually, community is not usually something you can seek first. Usually community is the fruit of a more central first search. And that is together to seek the God that we trust and then to entrust ourselves to that God and have a conversation in God. And that's not some airy-fairy ethereal thing. It's the reality that God really is the one that's bringing us together. God really is the one that's connecting us and uniting us with each other.
Yeah, and we've seen that over and over. I mean, countless, I'm not exaggerating, over the years, countless times of groups of people who have come together who do not know each other. And because the time was focused on time with God, mm-hmm. The community develops within the first day. I mean, I keep expecting to be surprised, or not surprised, but every time there is this way in which communion is just an automatic, connector. And it is such, a wonderful privilege to have seen that over and over and over again. We've seen people, and they barely know each other's names yet. They don't even know what they do for a living,
yeah,
necessarily.
They have different, you know, sort of business or job roles. They're different generations.
Yes.
They maybe have very different ethnic backgrounds, different economic backgrounds, you know, with all of these differences. But when we get away together and we make some space for each of these individuals to draw near to God, we find that they didn't even realize it, but they were drawing closer to each other. There was a sense of security and trust in God's presence that they bring to each other, and it changes the nature of the interactions.
Oh, it does. And even that that simple act of hearing each other tell the stories of how they met with God. I love that because it really does draw them together. So we've got one more here. Number six is listen.
That's really complex. That's. Could you say that again?
There's not even an extra sentence on there to help describe it.
One word.
Listen, and it was in all caps. And you can see how that obviously helps when you're acting. You have to listen to the other person if you have any hope of coming up with something to say. And listening is really true listening is becoming a lost art in our culture right now. People are sort of, it's coming in sound bites, or you're reading it real quick on social media, and then people are just reacting, not even responding usually. Yeah. It's usually a reaction, but listening is an art form that we can nurture. It's rare. It takes presence. It takes time. It takes humility to not be listening to form an answer or to correct or to judge or to impress. Listening means the other person is speaking and you are taking in what they're saying. So you can actually stop. You can focus. You can lay down your own agenda and really listen. And then you can have a response instead of a reaction based on what's actually happening.
Yeah.
So I just think listening, I have a talk I do, and I haven't done it in a while, but there's an extended list. Maybe somehow we can share that. I don't know under what format, but maybe a podcast.
Maybe this is a follow-up idea that you've just had.
I just had a follow-up idea. Listening is not something we can talk about in 5 minutes here and solve it. It really is a huge issue, I think, in our culture. And it goes hand in hand with presence.
Mm-hmm.
Because in order to listen, you have to get your body and your mind and everything right in the spot where you are. And you open yourself up to what the other person is saying. So I think I just opened a door to maybe a podcast for...
Yeah. Well, I think that'll be good because, I mean, the one thought I was having as you were sort of unpacking that is a lot of our listening is with ourselves in mind instead of listening with the other person in mind. We're totally focused on, okay, they're saying words. What's that bring to my mind? Oh, they're saying something. Oh, I disagree with that. Oh, they're... So our attention is completely on us. We're giving a little 10% to the other person because, of course, we need to hear the words they said so we can prepare our wise and, correct response to them. But that's not really listening. You know, your time is something far more robust, far more loving, I think, and far more of a servant-like posture toward another person.
Yes.
I like that. We'll have to work on the idea of a future podcast episode focused on listening.
Yeah, I think that'll be great.
So our hope is that, some of these rules, and maybe one or two of them especially, will help you in your own relationships and even in your creative process in the work that you do. Remember to take a moment now to go and visit our Patreon page at patreon.com/unhurriedliving.
And we want to thank you again for joining us. We're so glad you're part of this community, learning together to rest deeper, live fuller, and lead better.